D-Mace Finnegan and Donick 102.5, the game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Finnegan, and David Janes here with you. I hope everybody is having a wonderful start to their Thursday. I had to think about what day it was there for a second. But it's Thursday, and I hope everybody is having a wonderful time. I do want to start today's program by giving a shout out.
Okay.
To WTOC, the CBS television affiliate in Savannah, Georgia. The station did a report on Falcons practice and misspelled Michael Penix's last name in the worst way possible. And yes, it is absolutely what you think it is.
Yep.
I can't say it, but let's just say instead of an X, there's a different letter that touches the X on the keyboard. So shout out to WTOC.
It's a body part.
It is a body part.
Mm-hmm. Y'all have seen the video. You've seen the photo, so you guys know.
You guys know.
Yeah, yeah. Y'all grown-ups.
But shout out, WTOC.
Well, not really grown-ups. And we're laughing about it. It's kind of funny.
We're still kids inside. Wow. You mentioned, Willie, that stuff like that happens more times than not. Maybe not to that degree.
Yeah, usually it doesn't end up being, you know, a different word that really is eye-opening like that.
Just like they spell Burt Nyheel name wrong.
Right, right.
You know?
And it's unfortunate because I do think sometimes if television stations or whoever is doing production like that skimps on a paid position, sometimes it's not like a 20-year veteran that makes that mistake. Typically, it's usually a young person that hasn't done it very often, and you don't double-check. And it could happen to the best. You know, it could happen to somebody that's done it for a long time. But when it goes wrong, it really goes wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Could have been autocorrect.
Oh, man. That means you...
I hope it wasn't autocorrect.
Because if that was autocorrect, that means you have been using that word a lot.
Especially at the station.
Yeah.
Because autocorrect, usually it's... You know, it puts the word that you use the most that closely resembles, you know, what you're trying to spell out. So shame on, you know, that person.
Well, I do wonder if it was an autocorrect. I do wonder.
You better hope that was an intern. You know, this is a good day to blame interns.
Yeah.
It's always
blame intern day.
It's always good to blame interns.
Yeah.
Every day is blame interns day. I've been an intern. I got blamed for things. That's part of the process. That's how you get your college credit, by being blamed for things. Speaking of first-round quarterbacks, Cam Ward. So all of you know this. You don't have to listen to me tell you. The Titans have not been a model of stability in recent years, and that's putting it lightly. They've gone through multiple head coaches, multiple general managers, and multiple quarterbacks. And the Titans hope that Cam Ward is the long-term answer at quarterback. But there are a lot of questions about Brian Callahan and whether he is, frankly, a good NFL coach. He's on all of the hot seat lists that you're going to read. I'm sure, Willie, the odds are out there. We get all of those emails. No, next coach fired in the NFL. What are the odds?
It's coming.
I'm sure Brian Callahan is at or near the top of all of those lists. But Cam Ward yesterday was asked about his relationship with Brian Callahan early in their careers together and the importance of having stability at coach in order for Ward to succeed. Here is what Cam Ward said about Brian Callahan yesterday.
I just think he's going to put me in the best position to succeed. And that's with my quarterback coach, Coach Bo, and the OC, Coach Nick. I mean, I'm trying to play as long as I can for Tennessee with those three guys at the helm. Those guys, they continuously give me feedback, even when I don't want feedback, and they continuously get me better. When I ask questions, they answer every question to the little detail as much as I need it. So I'm blessed to have those three, you know, in the same room with me. They push me to be great. I want to be one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. And I just think the more that we continuously build our relationship, us three, Coach Callahan, continuously getting to know what I like on the field, when I like it on the field, then me also being smart with the ball and gaining that trust every day from him to have those play calls, whether he wants to go deep or do quick game. I just think he's going to end up helping all three of us out in the long run.
So that was Cam Ward yesterday talking about Brian Callahan and the other offensive coaches on the staff. So here's my question for you, Willie and Derek, as well as all of our listeners at 615-737-1025, or phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. You hear the rookie quarterback, the number one overall pick in the draft, stand up for his coach pretty early on. How much do you think that endorsement, how much weight do you think that endorsement holds with the people who hold Brian Callahan's job status in their hands? Amy Adams Strunk, Chad Brinker, and Mike Borgonzi.
Honestly, nothing at this point, not until we start winning games. It means nothing until you start winning football games and they see you develop as a quarterback. You know, Patrick Mahomes, in his first year, went out there and spoke from the top of the mountains for anybody on that coaching staff offensively, especially, I think Matt Nagy was his OC or quarterbacks coach at one point. And then obviously he had others after that. But it's not until you establish yourself on the field that holds weight, not only in a locker room, but throughout the franchise. Because Kenny Pickett, I don't care how much he vouched for coaches, they're going to be looking at him like he's crazy. Like, dude, how can you vouch for a coach and you ain't even out there getting the job done? We're firing all of y'all. So until you start, if they see progress in you, if they see development in you, and then you start putting wins on top of wins, that's when your voice rings loud throughout the organization. Until then, I don't care if you're the number one pick. If those guys in that locker room and in that coaching staff isn't getting the job done and y'all are not winning games, Cam Ward can get on any station in television station in the city and say he loves Brian Callahan and everybody else. That ain't going to mean a hell of beans because they're going to get him out of here. It's just plain and simple. Until you start to produce on the field, that's when, your word can sway individuals throughout the organization. But until then, you're like everybody else, every other rookie. You got to prove it.
I think it's going to help Brian Callahan if this continues to be the theme, if Cam Ward continues to publicly back his coaching staff. But the real question is, are the people that make the decisions level-headed? And will they cave if things don't go well? Most people picking the Titans this year are going to have them at somewhere between 3 and 6 wins. Am I right?
Mm-hmm.
I would say 90% of the predictions will be in that range, 3 to 6. And that's a pretty wide range, right? There's a difference between 3 and 6. But I'm giving you what I think. The question is, when the heat comes and they lose some games and everybody in the Titans fan base, the loud minority, whatever you want to label them as, is saying, this guy can't get it done. That's 2 years and his record is 6-30 or whatever his record would be, right? If you have two three-win seasons, mm-hmm. or a three-win season, a five-game, that's what you're going to hear pounded in everybody's head. But if the quarterback, who everything is riding on, and I can't emphasize that enough with what they chose to do, which was use the first pick and not trade and get more assets, I think his opinion should matter if he's doing the right things. If it looks like he is carving his way out to be a successful guy, then I think that should carry the weight. And what we're going to talk about is the pathway that it's gone in a lot of other similar situations, because it has been completely chaotic. And I just can't believe that it's always the coach's fault, because when you have the first pick, that next year usually doesn't go very well. So you're going to have adversity and somebody's mm-hmm. going to get blamed. As Adam said, the blame game happens all the time, and it's usually on the coach. But that's, a lot of times, to me, not the best thing for the quarterback.
No, it's not the best thing when you're playing musical chairs with the few people that are entrusted to develop this quarterback. I get that. But I don't think you can have development and not have the wins. I don't think that can happen. If your quarterback is developing the way you want him to develop and he's on task, you know, you should be able to pick up wins based upon that. So to me, if he's developing, the Titans winning. I'm not saying the Titans are going to win 9 or 10 games, but his development will dictate if they win 2 or 3 games again, you know. And then obviously injury is a factor. But if this team stays healthy, his development can ensure that this team will not lose, you know, will not win only 2 or 3 games this upcoming season.
Let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Jared in Spring Hill. Jared, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Hey, gentlemen, first time in this program. I appreciate the participation. Let me just chime in. I'm with Derek. I don't necessarily think that this is going to mean that much right now. But one thing I'm maybe picking up on a trend of Cam Ward's is this is just my perspective. Does he just say things that to appease people of what they want to hear? Because this is something, yes, this is the right thing you want your quarterback to say. But also, too, I always go back to that Fortnite night where he said Tony Pollard was the best running back and Calvin Ridley was the best receiver. Is he just kind of placating to us and doing the right thing? Because, again, I kind of see that as a chameleon, and I don't necessarily – I kind of want to know what people are, not necessarily just blending into the room to fit in, because he could just be blending in with the yes men they have in there right now. So I don't really think it takes up too much water yet. And, Derek, I got another thing. You've seen a team, and Willie, sorry, you've seen the team also. Like, given what this team is and PK's article came out about the lack of identity, what can be this team's identity moving forward this season? Guys, it's a pleasure. Tighten up.
Well, thank you for the call.
Jared. Derek, why don't you answer Jared's first question about Cam Ward and whether he is just saying things to placate his teammates, his coaches, etc.
I don't think he's saying things just to placate them. I think in his mind, he believes it. He has to. If he has any doubt, how are they then going to develop as a team? If the guy you have entrusted your offense to has doubt, how do you then go out there and you know, run the offense that you need to run? In order to develop as a quarterback and to run this offense the way, you have to have confidence in who you're throwing it to. So I don't think there's anything wrong with Cam Ward believing what he believes. So, you know, he'll find out whether these guys can be one of the best groups in the league or not. He'll find that out once the season gets started. But I want my quarterback to have this type of confidence. I want him, you know, I want to walk in a room as a wide receiver and my quarterback believe in what I can do. You want that as a quarterback, I mean, as a wide receiver. If you don't, I mean, you can't go out there and do your job the way you need to do it. So I don't think he's trying to placate to anyone. I mean, you may think it's something other, and I you know, I don't blame you, because guys have, you know, said some things that they know good and well wasn't true. But I think Cam Ward truly believes this, and he has to.
I'm intrigued about this pattern, because it is a pattern. Like, he's been consistent in how he's
like Diego.
He's really trying to you know, pump up the guys around him, even veteran players, right? And I don't think it's really in the name of I want them to like me. Mm-hmm. I think he wants to connect with them. He's like, look, I got confidence in you. I'm gonna try to bring out the best in you. I hope it can work. I think it can backfire. You can end up looking bad if things don't go well. But I admire it to a degree. And I think that even can segue us into the identity question, because I think the identity is going to be Cam Ward if he's worth anything. Right? I think you want the identity to reflect Cam Ward's strengths. And I agree that they don't have an identity right now. I think what they want to be is a defense that's aggressive, that can cause turnovers, right? Mm-hmm. They blitz. They try to make things happen. That's what they want to be defensively. And offensively, I think they want to rally around a rookie quarterback with good offensive line play. I think that's That's really what they're trying to do. I don't know if that really is a clear identity, but it's a foundation, and I don't think they got anything built foundation-wise last year.
Josh from Nevada on our text line says, Jared from Spring Hill said it best. Come on, D, you really think he thought Burks was a top receiver in the league without any proof? He does believe, I'm sure, but he also pleases the media a lot. I would disagree with that last sentence. I don't think Cam Ward is doing anything to ingratiate himself with the reporters who cover him every day. I don't get that vibe. We can talk about the Fortnite stream. Who are your favorite receivers in the NFL? Or who are your top receivers in the NFL? Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson and Treylon Burks. That was before the draft, if I recall correctly. So he knew what audience he was playing to. I think that's what Jared's point was and what Josh's point is. I would disagree with Josh's final sentence about Cam Ward pleasing the media. I don't get that vibe from him.
It's just like, I want people to understand. Football, it's no different from running a company, you know, from having a group of individuals that you are tasked to lead. It's all the same. Whoever the leader or leaders, in order to you know, do your task, you got to believe in the people that are tasked to do it. If I'm a CEO, if I don't believe they can do it, I'm going to get somebody else. I'm walking in a building with fresh eyes as a CEO, a new CEO. I'm walking in a building with fresh eyes. I'm looking at things, and I'm bringing in my crew, and I'm saying, hey, listen, every person to a man and woman, we are the best in this room. And that's how we got to approach our job. I believe in you until you show me otherwise. People, that's football. So Cam, just visualize it with me, people. When Cam walks in that locker room, he's the new CEO of this team. He's watched film. He's seen things. But his things, I want to win. That's all. So I am going to do whatever. I believe in my guys until they show me otherwise. I believe in them. So let's go. He can't walk in and say, man, he can't be like Deion Sanders did when he first got to Colorado. You get out of here. I don't like you. I never played with you. You get out of here. You, why are you still in the league, man? You spent 10 years. Why are you still? No, he can't walk in the room, and he would never do that. He walked, I guarantee you, he walked in Incarnate Word, Washington State, and the University of Miami the same way he's walking in here to Tennessee. I believe in each one of y'all until otherwise proven.
615-737-1025. Your reaction to what Cam Ward had to say about Brian Callahan. How much weight does Cam Ward's endorsement of Callahan hold? How much should it hold? Let us know. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, more from Cam Ward on the importance of coaching stability. And Willie and I did some research on just how much turnover there is at the coaching positions, namely head coach and offensive coordinator, for young quarterbacks. We will get to that next. 615-737-1025. Later today on ESPN 94.9 The Fan, the Nashville Sounds take on the Durham Bulls. First pitch is at 5:35. Coverage is also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Sounds Baseball on ESPN 94.9 The Fan is presented by Twin Peaks and Family Leisure.
I think it'll lock everything. You see it with the best quarterbacks out there. Tom Brady, he has stability. Lamar, he has stability. Pat, he has stability. And so I just think a lot of guys who have stability in the NFL can succeed, I wouldn't say at a faster rate, but can succeed long term. And I just think that's what we need in Tennessee. We haven't had that in a long time. But I think the guys we have right here, offensively and defensively, so I think we've got the stability to do it.
That was Cam Ward talking about the importance of coaching stability in the NFL. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you, talking about that stability and how important it is for a young quarterback. And before we dig into some research that Willie and I did, I want to play this clip from Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning was on Kevin Clark's, I believe it's called the This Is Football podcast. This is back in January, so keep that in mind as you're listening to some of the examples that Peyton Manning is using. But here was Peyton Manning on Kevin Clark's podcast answering this question.
It bothers me that Bryce Young is already on his third play caller,
yeah,
and he's only played, you know, two seasons, right? Caleb Williams is going to be on his third play caller sometime next September. And that to me, that's a miss, right? If we're going to draft this guy, okay, who's the head coach going to be? The coordinator, this is the system we're going to run. If the coordinator leaves and takes a head coaching job, I want the guy that's replacing him shadowing him 24/7. He's riding to work with him. He's eating breakfast with him. Maybe sleeps in the same room. It's kind of awkward with the coordinator's wife, whether she wants somebody laying on the floor. But I want them there the whole time so that quarterback doesn't have to learn a new system every single year. I think Baker Mayfield had to learn 5 systems in 4 years. Alex Smith, 6 systems in 6 years. Like, Tom Brady had the same system his whole career. Yeah. I had the same system my first 14 years in Indy. There's a reason that you know, going back to those reps. And so, yes, you're exactly right. It's more than just – it's an organizational plan. What is the best way to develop this guy? Don't make him learn Latin, German, and French all in the first 2 years. That's not fair.
That last line made me chuckle. The thing about the wife and the coordinator, I don't know what that was about with Peyton Manning. But the don't make him learn Latin and German and French or whichever languages he used. That line stuck out to me at the end.
I think even for those of us who know a little bit about languages, you know, sometimes your mom or your you know, somebody in your family is like, you need to take Latin because then you can take any other language and it's much easier to learn it. I never bought into that. Like, I'm not taking Latin. Nobody speaks Latin. But I see what he's saying. And Dimash, you can speak to how tough it is to learn a different set of terminology at a different offense. But nobody has learned at all from Peyton Manning, because I just looked at 9 quarterbacks, and we mentioned this yesterday. We started this discussion yesterday. There have been 9 quarterbacks, not including Cam Ward, so he's the 10th, that teams have used one of the first 4 picks in the draft on. And 7 of the 9 have already had at least one change in the play caller, the offensive coordinator, and or the head coach, and some way more. And Peyton Manning mentioned a couple of them, Bryce Young, Caleb Williams, etc. So nobody is learning anything. It's getting worse. They're getting more impatient. And the results speak for themselves. You have very little success so far among the 9 quarterbacks, and these are the top 4 picks in the draft. There's so much invested, so much riding on getting a return on your investment there. They're not getting it, and that's got to be one of the reasons why.
I want you to go through that list, but I sort of did the same exercise, and there's one that just, when I wrote it down, it just shocked me. Caleb Williams, and there's a lot of hand-wringing going on about Caleb Williams. You hear it all over ESPN shows. If they're not talking about the Cowboys and Micah Parsons, they're talking about the Bears and Caleb Williams. Caleb Williams is about to start his second season in the NFL. He is on his second full-time head coach. So I'm not including interim there. He's on his second full-time head coach and his 4th offensive coordinator. 3 different coaches held the OC role last season for the Chicago Bears, and they have a new one this year. Caleb Williams already, 2 full-time head coaches, 4 offensive coordinators. And he's about to start his second season in the NFL. And you wonder why there's so much hand-wringing about Caleb Williams. I mean,
and he's not alone.
No. Who are some of the other ones that stood out to you on that list?
Well, I just looked at the 9 that have been used with one of the first 4 picks since 2021. So I'm not even going back to some of the crazy ones from the past, you know, going back 10 or 20 years. I'm just looking at recent football. And, you know, here's one. Bryce Young, 3rd head coach, 2nd play caller. And this is his, 3rd year? Trevor Lawrence, 4 head coaches, if you include the interim. 3 different play callers. So this will be his 3rd coming up with the new regime this year. Then you have the total busts like Zach Wilson and Trey Lance. And you might argue that those guys weren't going to get it done regardless. They just weren't good enough, and that does happen sometimes. But I don't think it's a coincidence that both definitely had some change in the offensive play calling while they were there. C.J. Stroud, even one of the success stories, they fired the offensive coordinator after the second year, so Bobby Slowik went from being a really trendy head coaching candidate, mm-hmm. who some people were touting, hey, maybe this is the guy that the Titans should hire as the head coach. He got fired after the second year last year for the Texans. So they're changed offensive coordinators, and their quarterback was playing pretty well. I don't know what factor that's going to be going forward.
Let's keep it close to home for a moment. Marcus Mariota had three head coaches in his first four seasons: Ken Whisenhunt, Mike Mularkey, Mike Vrabel. He had, if I recall correctly, three offensive coordinators in that time: Jason Michael, Terry Robiskie, and Matt LaFleur. So there's an example from right here in Nashville. Marcus Mariota, first four seasons in the NFL. Three head coaches, three offensive coordinators.
It's built in because when you start, and the other trend I saw, of these nine quarterbacks, seven of them had at least one change, have had at least one change in the head coach or the offensive coordinator, and often more than one change. But seven of the nine have had one change. Seven of the nine also were thrown into the starter spot day one, week one. And so I don't – and when you're picked that high, that means you're playing for a team that was really bad the year before. And because they use a draft pick on you, the first-round pick, it means you probably don't have a ton of talent around you that first year. It makes it a really tough environment to succeed in.
See, here's sometimes the problem with, you know, you having these young quarterbacks. And sometimes early on, the development is crucial. Like that first 6 months, once camp started, I'm saying camp that they're in now, that first 3 to 6 months is crucial in your development of a quarterback and what type of offense you want to be now, what type of offense you want to be in 3 months, and what type of offense you want to ultimately get to as the season is winding down. Some people want to jump from one to three. Well, what do you mean? Well, they got these quarterbacks that are coming out, and they were these elite passers in college, and you want them to be that elite passer here. So you're skipping steps. Caleb Williams, Trevor Lawrence, guys like that, you know, that were elite passers, and even Joe Burrow to an extent, but I think what helped him, what might end up turned out to be a blessing, was him getting hurt and him just having to sit and watch and then coming in knowing what he knew the prior year. But when you try to hurry up the process, when you try to take a quarterback from step one to step three but skipping two, a lot of times that's where you have the problem. You got to know where your team is at, what the personnel look like, and then sort of take your quarterback from there. You can't say, well, I got this quarterback, and I don't care how my roster look, he's going to get us there. No, he's not going to get you there. You have to bring him along as your roster say bring him along. Because if you don't have the playmakers to go out there and do something, it happened to Will Levis last year. They couldn't hold up. That was one of the problems, but he had his own set of issues. But they couldn't hold up. So what happened? The offense was minimized, and they couldn't consistently produce anything because they were trying to do something without the talent to do it. So to me, all these quarterbacks, that's why it's so imperative. To me, you got to get an offensive line, and you got to get you a run game. You have to. Because if that's going, no one can make you fast forward the process. Nobody. If the running game is going and the offensive line is blocking, you're going to run and bring that quarterback along at the pace you need him to come along, develop.
Here was another data point that I found, and I think it's more coincidental than anything, but I still found it to be interesting. Five of the past seven quarterbacks drafted number one overall have had their coaches fired in season during their rookie years. Caleb Williams, Bryce Young, Trevor Lawrence, Baker Mayfield, and Jared Goff. The two who didn't, Joe Burrow and Kyler Murray. Now, I looked at how long those coaches were with their teams before being fired. Matt Eberflus was fired in the middle of his third season. Frank Reich and Urban Meyer were fired during their first season. Those were, especially Meyer, that was a terrible hire. Hugh Jackson was fired in Cleveland in his third season, and Jeff Fisher was fired in his fifth season with the Rams organization. So I don't know if that necessarily means anything, but I did find it interesting that five of the past seven quarterbacks drafted number one overall had their coaches fired in season during their rookie years.
Because it's a crapshoot, you know? It's almost hard to bring once you bring the coach in after a losing season, you know, the Titans, they bring in a coach, they're losing. They end up losing again last year. They end up getting the first round pick. I mean, first pick in the draft. It's hard then to say, we're going to give you two more years to develop a quarterback, even though you should in a sense. But it's hard after you just play bad enough to get the number one pick. And if you come back this season and we don't see any, one, the record needs to be, you know, at a point, we don't possibly need to go to the playoffs, but we need to win more games than we did last year. And if you're not on pace on that, how then can I keep you? Even though it may be, quote unquote, best to keep them another year under that system, but how many people are going to stick around for that?
Well, most people have not. Most people have gone the other way.
Absolutely.
Like, let's change it. It's not working. Let's change it. And I do think history has shown that that is probably not a sound strategy based on the outcomes of this. These first picks in the draft, I've even stretched it to the top four picks. They are more often than not, it's overwhelmingly so, not saviors, right? They're not the game-changing, culture-changing star that you hope that pick will be. It's anything but that in most cases.
615-737-1025. Your reaction on coaching stability around the NFL, especially as it relates to the Tennessee Titans. We will take your reaction at 615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Coming up next, I want to play devil's advocate on this. I do have a question for the other side of the argument as it relates to Brian Callahan, and we'll do that next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5 The Game. This week's Nashville's Best Deal is Fat Bottom Brewing Company. Join Fat Bottom this Saturday for their lucky 13th anniversary party at 844th Avenue North in Nashville. A full day of casino-themed fun, tattoos, face painting, and of course, ice cold beer. Get a $100 gift card half off while supplies last at thegamenashville.com/deals. Do not miss their lucky 13th anniversary party this Saturday at Fat Bottom Brewing Company. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Bingen here with you, talking about the importance of coaching stability for a young quarterback. Cam Ward went to bat for Brian Callahan the other day. I'm about to play devil's advocate for a moment because I think this is a question that a lot of our listeners have. What if Brian Callahan simply is not a good football coach? Should the Titans keep him around simply for the sake of stability? Or if they determine, hey, we gave Brian Callahan a shot, we're not sure it's working out, yeah, we would prefer not to have to switch coaches or systems with our young quarterback, but we'd rather take our chances with that than sticking with Brian Callahan.
Okay, would you have said that about Zach Taylor? Because Zach Taylor was in his second year with the Bengals. The first year, they did not have Joe Burrow. And they got the first pick in the draft, which was Joe Burrow. And then they proceeded to go 1-10 to start the next year. So it would have been pretty easy for the Bengals to say, Zach Taylor, man, that didn't work. Let's go in another direction, which a lot of teams, as we just documented, have done. But how do you know Brian Callahan is not a good coach until you give him a chance with personnel that has a chance to succeed? That's my question back to you. It's too often just, hey, what's the one loss record? Well, forget it. Move on.
No, you're right to an extent. But you're talking about the Cincinnati Bengals here. The one franchise that kept a coach 10 years. And people were like, what are you doing? Like, right. you want to stay a mediocre land forever?
Marvin Lewis. Yes. Marvin Lewis was there for a long time.
Exactly. So,
and had only and they a don't few
like,
good
exactly.
teams.
Exactly. Yeah. They don't like paying folks, and they don't like firing
folks.
They're
different. The Bengals are different.
They're different. But I did explain to you this off air. I said, it's as a first-year coach, the best thing you can do for yourself is not end up with the first overall pick the next following year. That's the best thing you can do for yourself. Don't get into a situation where you have the top three or four picks.
I wonder how often that happens. I imagine it happens more than I think. But how often does a team pick number one overall and then pick, let's say, again in the top three the following year? That might be another research project.
Well, they finished.
Get out your bag.
And who did they
Big
get?
Big-ass glasses.
Who did the Bengals get because they were bad?
Jamar Chase.
Exactly. The next thing.
But what I'm saying is this.
That's true.
What I'm saying is this. Because now, even though it didn't happen, you know, the year that he had a bad record and they end up drafting Joe Burrow, he's on the hot seat. Make no mistake about it.
Zach Taylor?
Zach Taylor. He's on the hot seat. Now, whether Cincinnati fires him or not, that's a whole different story. They may keep it for another 10 years. But it's you're put at a disadvantage as a head coach if you don't come in with a already established quarterback or that pick has already been made and you're coming in the year after. Because this is what happens. You come in like Brian Callahan did. You have a losing season. You got the first pick in the draft. You draft Cam Ward. We're all predicting that this team will win three, maybe four games, pushing it for five. So if they come back with another season with, you know, below average wins, what do you think the organization is going to do that's not named the Cincinnati Bengals? They're going to be looking to make a change.
But what I hope they do is
I'm not
look
saying they
at
will.
The history. Look at the history that we just went through and ask yourself, do I need to chill a little bit?
You may
and go
need
against
to, yeah.
what is a common thing that pulls you in. Mm-hmm. Because the fans are saying, yeah, make a change. They stink. Make a change. These aren't the right guys. This isn't the right coach. We need a real coach.
He's too soft.
By the way, thanks to a couple of texters for pointing this out. It's actually happened, teams having back-to-back number one overall picks. It's actually happened twice in recent history. The Jacksonville Jaguars had the number one overall pick in 2021 and 2022. The Cleveland Browns had the number one overall pick in 2017 and 2018. Then just by a quick search, it looks like the last time it happened before that was also the Cleveland Browns, but that was when the Cleveland Browns returned to the NFL in 1999 and 2000. So it does happen.
So and it happens, but if you're a head coach, that's not good. It's really not.
It's because hard to survive.
It's hard to survive when you were the guy chosen to lead this team before you drafted the quarterback and you end up having to lose the season. And then because you had a losing season, you draft the quarterback and then you have another losing season. The NFL owners, they're not willing because it's an arms race. And now they're not willing to wait three, 4, 5 years. You know, Dan Campbell, he survived. He was on the chopping blocks, but he survived. He was one of the rare people that survived. Why? Because I think his team played better in the second half of the season.
And he was going to eat their kneecaps.
Yeah, he was going to bite their kneecaps.
He also, I think, was pretty good at building the foundation, even when they weren't winning. And then, you know what else happened? They drafted their butts off.
Yes.
And they got good in a hurry. Mm-hmm. This is what is going to be the key for Brian Callahan. They need some hits of these young draft picks. I can't say it enough. And we already know that the picks from the last 5 years are going to give them very little. Very little. So it is a very precarious situation to be in. And most of the coaches in the history of the league, when they get into that, they don't get out of it. Mm-hmm. And that's why so often there is not stability for a young quarterback.
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, for your reaction. Gino has a comment about what Cam Ward said about Brian Callahan. Quote, of course Cam thinks they are the best wide receivers and running backs, etc. He played at no-name school, Washington State in Miami. That's college. NFL players are all the best, and all of them, for the most part, are better than college players. He hasn't played any teams, number ones, in an actual game yet. It's all hyperbole. Take it for what it is. Callahan's delusional optimism about this roster is rubbing off on the quarterback. That part is worrisome for this season.
Callahan hadn't said anything. Callahan is everything that he says or has said this season. He hasn't, you know, oh, we got the best roster, this and that. He wants to see development. He know where his team needs to get better, and he said it. So I don't think Callahan has been delusional, at least not this year. I don't think he has. So I don't think the quarterback is picking up on any delusional tendencies that may or may not be going on. This guy, I don't know why it's so hard for people to understand. Sometimes, if Peyton Manning walked in here, you would, and he said this group was the best, you would be like, yes, Peyton. I understand why you would do that, because he has the skins on the wall, but Peyton couldn't throw from here to the bathroom right now. But you would believe him. This kid, just, he's different from what we've had here in a good while. Embrace that, people. It may not work out the way we all wanted to. And then again, it may exceed any expectations you may have for him right now. But I don't know what's wrong with the kid coming in and believing in what he has in front of him. Do you want him to come out here and say they all trash? And then y'all be like, get rid of the guy. We don't need that type of temperament or that type of, you know, virus in our culture. Look at him. So he's almost damned if he do and damned if he don't.
I've said many times that I think PR has a lot to do with a text like that. Mm-hmm. Delusional optimism. The front office, I don't think, did him a very good service last year with all of the, quote, spending in free agency. They spent $100 million plus in free agency. They're going to be competitive. They had a choice, and they, from the top, I think, tried to push that optimism when the reality was they were rebuilding. That didn't help Brian Callahan. I also do think that Brian Callahan probably needs to be a little more even-keeled when he answers questions. I do think he's optimistic. I think he is a grass half-full.
But I don't think he went out of his way to, like, pump this team up.
But I think he tends, like, I'll give you one. Mm-hmm. Jalen Harrell. Last year there was a day that I happened to be at a training camp where he said, I think we may have a three-down outside linebacker kind of player that we drafted in the seventh round. And Jalen Harrell has not.
He said the key word, may.
Right.
I think
but
we may.
But he didn't have to say that. Like Mike Vrabel was much more, yeah, he's doing
but
okay.
But that was last
Let's
year,
see.
Willie.
We'll see. I think sometimes he likes answering the question, mm-hmm. which the media probably should appreciate. He gives you detail, but I think the optimism does come out. But that's him. He's just being himself. I don't think it's delusional. I think it's his belief that the glass is half full. But sometimes I think he puts himself in trouble that way.
Quickly, Brian on our text line says, I get it that we all want stability, but shouldn't a room full of football people be able to tell if a coach is in over his head after the first or second year, even with a bad roster? Business executives do it all the time, realizing somebody may not be what they were built up to be. The same can be said for a football coach.
But why is the assumption that the coach is in over its head?
Because the team went 3-14 last season.
But he didn't make those picks. Look at the drafts, 2020 through 2024. They yielded next to nothing. Skoronski, Latham, Sweat. That's the nucleus of picks they got in five drafts. Five. Brian Callahan had nothing to do with any of that. So why is the assumption that he's in over his head? What about the guys who made those picks? You can't get out of that. You can't spend free agent money and say, well, that's going to solve the problem. That's the source of the problem.
Well, they got rid of those guys that made the pick. They're all gone.
Right.
You know, whether, you know, they believe, anybody believes, you know, Brian Callahan is way over his head or not. He has to prove it this year. And I think this year he has tapered, you know, down some of the optimism because last year it was like, you know, rainbows and roses, and everything was great, and it got, you know, it bit him in the behind. So this year I think he's a little bit more measured about his roster, and I think he understands that I know where we are as a team, and the only way we're going to get better is if we develop in a way that we need to and that we protect our young quarterback.
615-737-1025. We will continue to take your reaction on Brian Callahan, Cam Ward, coaching stability, and the Tennessee Titans. But coming up next, speaking of Cam Ward and Brian Callahan, there is something that Brian Callahan has not explicitly done yet. We all know it's coming, but he has not explicitly done it yet. Now we have sort of an explanation as to why, and we'll get to that next. 615-737-1025. This September, Tim McGraw will be performing at Trinetics' Rock the Cradle in Nashville, a meaningful event supporting newborns and moms at Ascension St. Thomas Midtown. Get your tickets now at rockthecradlenashville.org.